Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Wednesday, September 21st. 50 degrees here in Old Town Park City, and on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center's Bob Bedore. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie, and welcome to what is going to be a wet and wild Wednesday. It is just going to be a day where we are seeing a flood watch through most of our state today. It's going to hold on. Now, the flood watch isn't there in Park City, but that doesn't mean it's not going to be raining quite a lot. We're going to see showers throughout the day and possibly some thunder showers. So please, if you are out and about today, you're likely going to see some rain, but keep an ear out for any thunderstorms, and please get out of the way if those are coming, because we don't want to be a part of that. So that's going to be continuing today and into the evening. No real rest as we get going. We'll see those showers going on way into the early mornings, and even a chance of those showers continuing into Thursday. But our high today should be about a 72, and then a mid-40s for that overnight low, as those showers will continue to really keep the temperature down. And then with that, we'll see that stay low, as we've got that, as I said, the chance of showers Thursday going into Thursday morning, even a little bit into the afternoon and evening, about a 40% chance, but temperature's only going to be about 63 for the high, 39 for our low on Thursday night. But then we see a drastic change start to happen. Things will blow through, and we're going to see sunny skies for the next little bit. Friday, sunny sky, temperature rising up a little bit, about 66, and then it's going to stay clear through the night, 41 for overnight low. Saturday, you'll see this is like a 3-degree incremental rise every time. Saturday, going up to about 69 degrees for your high, could reach 70 or the low 70s. Back down to about 42 for our overnight low Saturday night. Still under sunny skies on Sunday. Well, we'll have a 72 for our high, low about 44. Monday and Tuesday, going to stay into that mostly clear sunny skies, as both those days will be about mid-70s for your high. So again, the real thing we need to watch out for is today and into tomorrow. We're going to see some rain coming, so be ready for that. But once we get past that into Thursday late afternoon, from that point on, about the next 5-6 days, looking like very sunny, very nice. But watch out for those thunderstorms and enjoy what you have.
Okay, Bob, thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:08. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Mike Lures, the executive director of the Snohomish Basin Water Reclamation District. Later on, Park Record publisher Andy Bernhard is retiring, that after a 35-year career at the local newspaper. And finally, Woodward program manager Jared Dangerfield will have details about this weekend's Wheelchair Palooza. Also, an updated schedule for the Mountain Life. That's happening right after the local news hour. Today's guests are journalist Nathalia Holt, discussing her new book about five female spies in the post-World War II era wise gals, the spies who built the CIA and changed the future of espionage. Then local resident Renee Huang, the founder of Wild Women Tribe, a community group that connects like-minded women in transformational experiences outdoors. Finally, New York-based energy healer and meditation teacher Laura Chung, who left corporate America, discusses her new book, How to Manifest, Make Your Dreams a Reality in 40 Days. Get all of that coming up. Stay tuned. KPCW News Time now, 8:10. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour, joined now by the Executive Director of the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District, Mike Lures. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Well, let's start off with the flush index. We missed it last week. You had folks out of town, so we're going to compare. It's like we knew it. We were down about 20% in July. How did that all turn out?
So for the month of August, we estimated that there were 180,442 visitor nights. That's down 26.5% from August of 2021. And as we mentioned last month, we did not give a report, but I do have that information here. And for the month of July, we were down 23.8%. So last month and this month, we're hitting right about an average of 25% down.
Yeah, right. So it's pretty amazing how that all works.
You know, when people aren't here, they don't flush the commode, and we don't see the wastewater.
Yeah, and again, that's what it's just based on, volume that comes through.
That's correct.
Yeah. All right, well, then you also monitor the levels of COVID coming through the wastewater. What are we seeing there?
Yeah, just to remind your listeners, we have two water reclamation facilities, and twice each week we take samples of the wastewater, and they're sent to the health department down in Salt Lake, and COVID genetic material is looked for. And the good news is this week, not only the two Park City sites, but also the Colville site show very, very low levels of COVID. And that's the first time we've had such low levels in quite some time.
Yeah. So you kind of see it after the fact?
We see it before the fact.
Okay.
Yeah. So typically, when we monitor the wastewater and someone, say, catches COVID and they use, obviously, the bathroom, we see that and we will know that folks have COVID about 3 days before they know it. Now, back on the original strains, you know, 2 years ago almost now, that was about 7 days. But the some of the newer strains of BA4 and 5 show up a little quicker, but we still see it before you might even know you have it.
And the testing's done just similar how home testing is done, just a little swab and on some chemicals? Or?
This is a full-on PCR test. Mm. So, and some of these are actually sequenced, so you know if it's the BA5 or BA4 or some of these other strains.
Okay. What about in Wasatch County?
Wasatch County remains low at both sites.
Okay. And those may be headed to Moab. It looks like we've got elevated levels as well.
Moab has had a history, kind of like us here, being a resort community. They go up and down, and now Price and Moab, they're back in the elevated category.
Okay. Let's see. What's the latest with the East Canyon treatment plant expansion? I know since we last talked, the Summit County Council headed out there for a field trip.
That's correct. So to remind your listeners, we operate, again, two water reclamation facilities. And the facility located out at the Jeremy Ranch area is in need of an expansion because of the growth taking place in our community. We'll remain within the property that we own. And we're going through the approval process with the county council, and we've met with them. They've come out and taken a look at the site. And at this point, they haven't approved or disapproved anything. They haven't taken any votes. And they've asked us to look at a few things, and we're doing that. And we'll get back with them as soon as we redesign a few things and see if we can address their concerns.
Yeah, I think you're asking for a height exception.
Right. A water reclamation facility is an industrial site, and we have large equipment, and it takes tall buildings, and it's not your typical house-looking structure. So exceptions are needed for this type of operation on almost every single expansion that we've ever been involved in, and height is one of those.
Yeah. You have told me before that you're about 70% done with the design, so are we back to the drawing board?
No, the design is still good. We'll just put a pause on the design until we get these approvals, and then we'll start the design back up, and we'll probably finish the design in 2023 and bid it out at the end of 23.
Okay. And what is it that the council's asked you to look at?
We have one building in particular is very tall, and it can be seen by a couple of the neighbors, and they asked us if we can address that somehow. And we're looking at maybe shifting that building to an area that's not seen, or possibly even lowering it a little bit.
Yeah, and you had mentioned at one point, I mean, prices have gone up enormously. Hmm. Another year, will that help, given maybe some of the supply chain issues?
Or? You know, our crystal ball is as muddy as everybody else's. We don't know if it's going to help or hurt, honestly.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, and, you know, these types of projects take about 18 months to design. So when we change a design, it's not something that you just do in a month or two. It takes multiple months. There's a lot of heavy equipment in these buildings, a lot of reinforced concrete. And because of the type of building it is, the seismic codes that we have to meet are very substantial, and that takes a lot of detailed design.
Yeah. Again, you would hope to have this online by when?
2027.
Wow, okay. And in the meantime, the current plant continues to operate?
Right. The current facility is operating beautifully. We have capacity at this time. The idea is to have this expansion available for growth starting in 2027. We have projected what we think will happen in the way of growth for the next, say, 2, 3, 4 years. We'll see what happens with increasing interest rates and all. But so far, things haven't slowed down too much.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what about interest rates? What does that mean? Are you bonding for this?
Yes, we'll be bonding for a significant portion of this. And this will be paid for by new development, not our current customers. So as the cost goes up in the way of interest rates, the impact fees will go up accordingly.
Hmm. And again, you're not doing what you did at Silver Creek, which was basically building an entirely new one. You're just adding on to this one?
That's correct. Silver Creek was a complete, you might say, tear down and rebuild and upgrading the level of treatment to full-on advanced tertiary treatment. This project is simply an expansion of our existing facility.
Earlier this week, we played a regional Mountain West News Bureau story about water reuse. Basically, just given the dry and current conditions, especially in the Colorado River Basin, communities looking to keep more water in their system by reusing wastewater that is currently being sent down the stream. Amazing that California just looking into this now. I mean, they've been putting, it sounds like, at least Southern California, have been putting their wastewater into the ocean for, well, until now. I guess this is something that you, too, have been looking at?
We have. Here in the Park City area, water is provided by several water providers, and we're simply the wastewater providers. We do not have a right to use the treated wastewater that comes out the end of our pipe. That is still under, I'm going to say, the rights of the original water right holders, meaning the water companies. Now, once it flows down the stream, then they lose their rights to it, and the next downstream water right holder, uses it. But when it comes to reuse, a lot of people have a mindset that it's gross and it's, toilet to tap type thing. But in reality, the water that we all use has been used before, and it just goes downstream to the next person and it's used again. A classic example that a lot of people may not be aware of is Las Vegas. Las Vegas, or Nevada in particular, has a very small share of the Colorado River 1922 compact. Well, people ask, how does Las Vegas continue to grow? Well, there's two reasons. One, they got rid of their grass, so they because that's water that is in essence lost because a lot of it's evaporated or soaked in the ground that never makes it back to the reservoir. But when it comes to wastewater, out of all the casinos and all the venues in the Las Vegas area, that gets treated and pumped back to Lake Mead, and they get credit gallon for gallon for that water. So the water goes back to Lake Mead. They pull it back out of Lake Mead, it goes to the water treatment plant, it goes back to the casinos and all the entire city, and is flushed, treated, goes back to Lake Mead, it just goes in a big circle. And so, while it's not a direct connection, it does go back to the reservoir and is used, just goes in a big circle. So when you talk reuse, here in the West, the yuck factor goes away pretty quick when you turn your faucet on and nothing comes out, because the technology certainly exists to take wastewater, treat it to a higher level than what is in the streams that is used for drinking water, and it's a very reliable source. So while it might not take place here in Park City because we have water available in Rockport Reservoir and other reservoirs, certainly out here in the West, you will see reuse and direct reuse in the near future.
Hmm. Are there any downsides? I mean, I guess just expense, huh, in building the system.
You're talking about reuse?
Yeah.
It's an economics. It's an economics question. What is the cheapest way to get a reliable source of water for a growing community? And if you are out of other sources, taking wastewater and reusing it becomes a very viable source, and it's reliable. And here in the West, a lot of the water, reservoirs and streams are being impacted by climate change, and that reliability that we thought was once theirs is questionable.
Right. How often can water be recycled? Does it matter?
It's endless, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Huh. And I guess there is some loss, though, right, just through evaporation or?
In a wastewater system, there's very little. If you go directly from the wastewater system to the treatment plant, to the water treatment plant into the system because it never really, almost say, daylights. Now, in Las Vegas's case, because in Lake Meaden, you do have some evaporation there, but Big Springs, Texas is an example. They built a facility, I don't know, it's been 5 or 6 years ago now, that comes out of the wastewater treatment plant, goes into the water plant, and is used. And again, the technology exists and it's been proven. And many places are also saying, hey, let's use wastewater for, say, irrigation or snowmaking or farming operations to avoid using, say, culinary water or drinking water for that purpose. And a good example of that is the country of Israel. They decided some years ago that we no longer want to use, say, our culinary or drinking water for farming operations, you know, irrigation. So about 80% of their farmland is now irrigated with treated wastewater.
So you're saying at this point, really no need to do something like that. We have the resources that we, water resources we need.
Here in the Park City area, that's up to the water providers. But it appears to me that there's economic options that are probably less expensive than reuse here locally. But out here in the West, you will see reuse.
Okay. Also, I understand that you presented to the Park City Noon Rotary Club this year about PFAS. What was the presentation?
So I gave a presentation on microplastics, which also pulls in PFAS compounds. Microplastics are small pieces of plastic from all kinds of sources, including the wear of our tires on our local roads. And that's becoming an issue. Some of these microplastics are small enough to where they can get into the blood of humans. There's been some studies recently out of Norway where 80% of the people that had their blood checked had microplastics floating around their blood. So lots of research being done in that area. And some of these plastics are associated with PFAS, such as, say, Gore-Tex clothing has not only microplastic potential, but it also has PFAS compounds in there. So they're kind of hand-in-hand in many cases.
Yeah, what do we know about the effect? I mean, when you have these microplastics in your blood, I mean, is this the...
That's the big question. We do know that certain plastics are certainly toxic and have a negative impact, but the question that you've posed is, you know, what is health concerns of plastic? The bottom line is we don't clearly know at this point in time. But we do know that the smaller the piece of plastic, and we're talking all the way down in the nano range, which is very, very small, that those are more of a concern than the larger pieces of plastic.
Yeah. And what is it that the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District is doing about it, if anything?
So, interesting enough, when you do a load of laundry, especially when you wash synthetic clothes, like ski clothes, or, you know, I was telling the club that, you know, I wash my synthetic long underwear, the average load of laundry when you wash synthetic clothes has about 700,000 microplastic fibers in it, and that ends up at our treatment plant. We've been sampling for microplastics, and we're seeing about 15,000 microfiber pieces per quart of water. So 15,000 per quart of water, and we're running about 2 million gallons a day. So we see lots of microplastics. In most cases, it's in the form of microfibers. So good news is that because we have advanced wastewater treatment, we're removing about 99% of that. So, you know, that's kind of just by luck because we have such a great treatment. But you know, we still discharge a small amount into the environment. And the question is that a problem? And the answer is we don't know. The research hasn't been done.
And we're waiting for some kind of ruling from the Environmental Protection Agency?
This is something that's being looked at. We anticipate that in the future there will be something along the lines of a total maximum daily load of all microplastics together. And we think that's quite a few years away. We anticipate to see some type of PFAS regulations much sooner.
Yeah, so in the meantime, what? By cotton? By wool?
Well, there's a couple things you can do. Number one, do not heat food in a plastic container, say in a microwave. Just avoid that. Take it out of a plastic container. If you buy it in a plastic container that, say, was refrigerated, and put it on a, you know, ceramic plate or whatever and put it in a microwave. So avoid doing that. Number two, it's been proven that many microplastic fibers float around your house that come from your carpets, your your couches and your all other types of fabrics, including what you wear. So put a HEPA filter on your HVAC system, and HEPA filters will remove a good portion of the microfibers, or microplastics floating around your house. So those are a couple things you can do that are real simple, and it will make a difference.
Okay, we'll talk more about that some other time. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Leslie.
Mike Lures is the executive director of the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. 8:27, good morning. Well, local churchgoers in the Heber Valley are celebrating after hearing news of a temple to be built in their valley. As KPCW's Ben Lasseter reports, they hope those who have concerns will give it a chance.
Heber resident Ruth Holmes says Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints temples have always inspired her. She used to drive past the historic temple in Manti every day to go to high school. These days, she and her husband serve weekly in the Provo Temple. She says she was elated to learn on Monday that they and their five sons will soon be able to serve in their religion to the same capacity as always without having to travel to Provo.
We always had hopes that a temple would be here. And so we've been praying for one. There'd be times that I couldn't go down there because of the roads in Provo Canyon. They get too icy, or the assignments were early in the morning. It was kind of dangerous for me to go down by myself or travel home at night by myself.
As she says, temples are a holy sanctuary in the LDS religion.
So to the LDS church community, it means the literal dwelling place of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. It is his house. When we go to that place, we literally feel of his presence. And there's no other place like it on the earth to have that portal of peace and of love and of clarity and of revelation.
The future temple site east of downtown Heber on Center Street is an area where many live already and more development is expected. It's within a mile of Taylor West. His family of eight also travels regularly to Provo or American Fork, and sometimes there isn't room for everyone to visit those popular temples. He says the Heber Valley Temple will allow the Wests, particularly his teenagers, to better exercise their faith, and he praises the location for its proximity to neighborhoods and open spaces. Andrew Weber is another father of six who lives about a mile from the site. He says his family looks forward to attending the new temple regularly. He's also aware of concerns community members have about the temple. Those include traffic impacts, abrupt changes to property values, and possibly bright lights polluting the dark sky. He says he expects it to be a beautiful building and hopes it'll add value to the valley for everyone, not just followers of the church.
I think it totally depends on for one, if you are a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and that's not necessarily true that it can't add value to the community even if you're not. But a lot of folks, you know, they only see it as a large, maybe really well-lit building. But I think over time it won't have as much of an impact as some people may think it will, other than just a great addition to the valley.
In social media posts, some who identified as Heber Valley residents said they feared the temple would attract more development where there's already more growth than they want. Others questioned whether the three-story building in a residential zone will meet county planning rules. According to County Planning Director Doug Smith, the building hasn't been granted any entitlements. He said it's unlikely the county council would approve the plans before the groundbreaking date of October 8th. For that reason, he said he expects the ceremony that day to be largely symbolic, and major construction won't begin until all entitlements become official. Ben Lasseter, KPCW News.
KPCW News Time now, 8:31. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the man who has ensured that the local newspaper, the Park Record, has continued its 142-year tradition of publishing every week and then some is calling it quits in the studio. Park Record publisher Andy Bernhard. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing well. So why now? You've got a few good years left in you.
Well, I do have a few good years in me, but I'll tell you, it's been a long run. And I've been very fortunate to be in this position for, again, such a long period of time. But, you know, since the time I came to the Park Record in 1987, we've been through five ownership transitions. And those ownership transitions can be pretty stressful. You know, a lot of work, a lot of pressure on the staff and me to get it right. And our most recent ownership change was with Ogden Newspapers of Wheeling, West Virginia. And I think we've done a pretty good job of transitioning to their operating systems and getting everybody settled into yet another new environment. And I just thought that maybe this was just a good time to say goodbye and move on. When I think about what I'm doing right now, I feel like I'm retiring from the park record, but not necessarily retiring. I don't know what I would do with myself. There's only so much mountain biking and golfing and fishing just anyone can do.
Yeah, so I guess good timing before another perhaps ownership happens, huh?
Yeah, I don't anticipate that happening. Ogden Newspapers also owns the Ogden Standard Examiner, which is just coincidental in the name, and the Provo Daily Herald. So now they have a group of newspapers in Utah, and I don't anticipate seeing any further changes.
Okay. Well, you started a job, as you mentioned, in 1987. No experience whatsoever as a publisher. Your brother hired you. Maybe, what were some of the lessons that you learned pretty quick?
Well, I had actually been selling advertising in Salt Lake City for a year and a half before coming up here. So I wasn't totally green to the industry, but I was certainly green to being the man in charge. And at that time, Terry Orr was the editor, and my very first difficult and challenging situation was when she wrote a story about the scantily clad cheerleaders at the high school here and around the state. And my first angry call was from Jack Dozier, who was certainly intimidating in person, but also intimidating over the phone. So it was kind of a cold start for me, but that's the way it was going to be.
Yeah. Well, and that's the reality of newspaper, unlike live radio, right? I mean, what
right,
we say now, it's gone,
right?
I mean, certainly you can find it online, but when it's in print for...
The ink doesn't disappear.
Yeah. What does a publisher do anyway?
A publisher really is in charge of the business operations of the paper and oversees the editorial department and the content of the newspaper itself.
Yeah, so how much say do you have over the editorial content?
I guess I, you know, really had all the say I wanted, but I was very fortunate to have had incredible editorial staffs over the year, and in fact, in the 35-year period that I was there, I had a total of four editors, and that was Terry, Sina Flanders, Nan Noker, and Bubba Brown. So I had some really strong people, and there was, you know, really no need for me to micromanage individual news stories. I certainly had my say in editorials and always wanted to review columns and letters to the editor and guest editorials to make sure that we weren't getting ourselves in any kind of legal trouble.
Okay, because the buck stops with you at that point, I guess.
The buck does stop with me. And we, you know, on one situation, we had a story that Pat Parkinson did that got us in a little trouble. And I thought that I thought we could see our way through that one, but the insurance company said, pay the freight. And that's what we did.
What story was that? Remind me.
It was a story about an East Side sheriff's deputy. I don't really remember the details, nor do I want to go into them. Thank you.
Okay. Well, you know, I gave you a little bit of grief when you walked in. It was like, what the heck, Andy? You run the paper and you put that selfie on the front page with the story of you retiring. What's that all about?
Well, the story of me retiring is simply that the photo was a bad photo. Selfie I took in the parking lot. My staff photographer is on vacation, and so sometimes you just have to take what you get.
All right, so I'm not the only one who's let you know that you had a better choice than that.
I've heard from many friends. Thank you.
All right. Well, lots of changes, I think, under your tenure with the way that the paper is produced. You were the one that took it from once a week, I think. Was it a Thursdays?
When I got there, we were initially publishing weekly on Thursdays, and I believe it was sometime around 1996 or something. We took it to twice weekly, and We developed a magazine division, and that started out with the Real Estate Weekly, and now we do the Real Estate Monthly, and publish a total of 23 magazines in addition to the paper that include stuff like Milepost and Park City's Best, Winter and Summer Adventure Guides, Park City Home, Park City Parent, seasonal stuff like that.
Wow, that's, I didn't realize it was so many, so often. One every 2 weeks, basically, yeah.
Yes, including the Real Estate Monthly, yes.
Yeah. You also were the one that added color. Any good stories there?
Well, I suppose there are. Yeah, we added color because we thought that was where we needed to be going. And color was actually very expensive at the time. It's a consuming process, not only to generate the plates and shoot the pages, but on the press took a long time to warm up the press and get registration right, which of course we didn't always do. We were pretty much a short run at the time of about 7,000 papers, 8,000 papers right in there, and so you had huge percentages of waste at the time just trying to get it right, and you didn't always have time to get it right.
And I guess lots of technology changes as well. I mean, was it when you started, I mean, were you guys like putting letters in letter by letter?
Oh yeah, it was you know, the transformation that we've seen is really interesting because it's somewhat simultaneous to the growth and development of Park City. I mean, we when I got there were using paste-up boards, X-Acto knives everywhere, pica poles, border tape, typesetters, you know, the whole bit, and then you know, sooner or later, the Mac Classic showed up, and you know, it was just a nightmare trying to get everything to work right and start to transform to digital technology. So, you know, kind of looking outside in, when I look back at and how things have changed, again, it's been kind of simultaneously the growth of Park City from a sleepy little ski town to a globally recognized resort, and at the same time, the Park Record and, you know, the entire newspaper industry is evolving from, you know, paper-oriented to digitally oriented, and those were some, you know, very, very challenging times. I mean, and it's just kind of when I think back on it, to have, you know, Park City going through growth and development in a big way, at the same time the newspaper is just hemorrhaging the way they do business, it's just kind of interesting to me, I guess.
Yeah. And of course we have seen, I mean, during your career, that just the huge demise of newspapers, local newspapers across the country. How is it that you have managed to keep Park Records successful?
Well, you know, I mentioned magazines. You know, we've tried to create different revenue streams as best we could. I mean, back in the day, you know, it was newspaper, radio, TV, and outdoor. And you know, since then, I mean, you look back, and we didn't have cell phones, we didn't have email, we didn't have any of that stuff when I started. And the industry has obviously evolved, and the revenue streams have been fractured. So you just try to dream stuff up. You know, what are you going to do to continue generating the kind of revenue you need to do to pay your staff?
Yeah. And what have you seen? I mean, in terms of subscribers, I mean, has it remained constant?
Or our press run now on a twice weekly basis is about 5,000. We've maintained a fairly decent level of paid subscribers. And you know, interestingly, we had a bulk drop system set up with many of the resort hotels and property management companies, and frankly some of those just dropped off during COVID. They didn't want newspapers, they didn't want people coming in, they didn't want newspapers laying around, they didn't want the same people to touch the same paper, and so we lost some circulation, some of our free circulation as a result.
Yeah. Well, every year, you know, at the Utah Press Awards, you guys pick up awards, anything that kind of stands out over the last 3.5 decades about, wow, we did an amazing job there?
Well, you know, again, and that kind of goes back to me being able to, you know, be part of a really strong set of staffs. We've had a lot of people come and go over the years, and we've had some very, very good people working in our newsrooms and advertising departments, and really we have done really well at the UPA Awards, and you know I am, you know, honored, I guess, that I've had great employees that have created that.
Yeah, but nothing really stands out in terms
of
summary,
the
recording?
Well, last year we won the General Excellence Award, and that's one I'm going to be taking home with me.
Yeah. You know, and I think back at some of the reporters, like you mentioned. I mean, God, there was Randy Hanscott. He did a hilarious column. Rick Bruff, right, used to write a column for you. What do you
Rick
know?
Did.
Dave Fields, I mean, now as a reporter, now, right, serving as
Dave was a fabulous sports reporter, and you know, that's one of the things that I am gratified about is that we've had a lot of really really good people come through the office, and a community newspaper does not necessarily generate a career level of income, and so I always feel great when somebody who's come in and worked for 3 to 5 years and put together a great portfolio has the opportunity for some very significant career development opportunities.
Yeah. As we kind of mentioned, so what's next for you? I mean, what happens now? I mean, who's taking over?
Well, okay, so we do have some changes in staffing at the paper. Within the next 2 weeks, we have a new full-time editor coming in, and that's been kind of an arduous search for me. It's taken quite some time, and Jay Hamburger has stepped in and handled the interim editor position well. But a guy named Robert Myrowitz will be coming our way shortly, and he comes to us having done managing editing work in Durango and Colorado Springs and Alaska and South Carolina, and I'm really excited for this guy to show up. And then in terms of my replacement, Val Spung, who has been my ad director for 25 years, is going to take over in a dual role as ad director publisher until all that gets sorted out.
Okay. So when does Robert start?
I'm hoping that he starts within the next 2 weeks. I think he's looking for a place to live as we speak.
Yeah. Biggest challenge, I think, for you anymore, right?
Well, it is. And you know, it's really interesting. I was going back and looking at some old newspapers went back to a paper in 2010, I think it was, and the news was about housing and congestion, and it was just very interesting to me to see that those issues continue to be resolved.
Yeah. I guess in addition, the Park Record used to host the Spelling Bee. Interest on that, I guess, is just falling away, I guess, after COVID. We all have spell check. We don't need to spell anymore.
Well, and you know, I don't know that it's so much that. I love the Spelling Bee, and of course, I always appreciated you being an MC there. I don't know if it was called an MC, but you had some title. Anyway, I loved the Spelling Bee, and I loved putting it on, and Randy Barton would always give us the Egyptian Theater for the evening, and it just made a fabulous event. But then COVID hit, and Spelling Bee was canceled, and then we just, at this point, haven't re-engaged.
Yeah. Well, in addition to the publishing job, I know you've also served terms on the Chamber Executive Board, also President of Park City Rotary.
That's correct.
Yeah. You looking to take on any more service jobs once you retire?
You know what? I one of the things that's kind of floating around in the back of my mind is I haven't necessarily been a good attending Rotarian, and the Park City Rotary Club does so many good things in our community, and I think that I would like to take the opportunity to get a little bit more involved there. I really don't have, I'm not, I, I don't have another job I'm going to at this point. I plan on just letting some of the cobwebs blow out over the next couple of months, and suspect that I'll be making more laps this year than I've made in the past, and maybe start to try to figure it out. Come April next spring, who knows? I've got a fun boat trip coming up at the end of October, and I've got my usual October fishing trip coming up, and so there's some things going on, and it'll be really fun for me to. I don't know when the last time was that I didn't work on the Friday after Thanksgiving, so I'm actually looking forward to a true Thanksgiving weekend.
All right. Well, great job, and I just want to express my appreciation. I mean, I think we've always had that competitiveness between us. I mean, we're rival media groups, but there has been so much collaboration between KPCW and the Park Record as well, so I think that's really
tremendous. Thank you, Leslie, and I feel really good about that as well. You know, I always did view you as a competitor, but it was more of a competitor for news, as our revenue streams came from entirely different areas. We didn't have to compete on that front, and certainly that was always near and dear to my heart. But I always valued the radio station, and as I do today, and really do appreciate the friendly competition that we were able to have.
All right. Well, good luck, and I know you'll have a lot of fun, and not have to worry about where the paychecks are coming from.
Well, I do have to worry about where the checks are coming from. But, yeah, and if I might, I'd just like to thank my wife and my lovely wife, Julie, and my family for putting up with a lot of stuff, you know. Oftentimes bring things home, and you're often writing news stories about people that you know, and you have a lot of strained relationships as a result, and I'm really grateful that I had a solid foundation at home, and thank them very much, and certainly thank the staff that I have been fortunate to work with over many years, and last but not least, certainly the Park City community that's, you know, certainly well educated and committed to a positive growth in our community, and have always been very vocal about it on our letters to the editor page. So thank you all very much.
All right, keep writing. Andy, thanks.
Thank you, Leslie.
That's Andy Bernhard, again, the outgoing publisher of the Park Record. Last day is September 30th. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. We'll be talking with Jared Dangerfield right after this. KPCW News Time now, 8:50. Good morning. Well, Woodward Park City bringing the third annual Wheelchair Palooza to town this weekend. On the phone with details, I have the Woodward Programs Director, Jared Dangerfield. Good morning, Jared.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Hey, we'll start by telling us, what is a Wheelchair Palooza?
Yeah, it's a slight correction. I'm with Wasatch Adaptive Sports, and lucky enough to have Woodward hosting this event. And the Wheelchair Palooza is an event that Aaron Fotheringham, most commonly known as Wills from Nitro Circus, who does wheelchair like skateboarding tricks, he'll be coming to town to teach wheelchair users how to do tricks, show off some tricks, and just have an overall party at Woodward.
Okay, so it's this Saturday, September 24th. What's the time frame on this?
Yeah, we'll be there from 4 to 8 p.m.
Okay, and then what's going to happen? I mean, anybody's welcome to attend and do what?
Yeah, so it's open for all wheelchair users and their family to come and meet Aaron, see the tricks that he's doing. Maybe people have seen him on America's Got Talent, where he's done front flips, back flips, all sorts of crazy things. And then we will also be there with Wasatch Adaptive, and we'll have mountain bikes and other adaptive equipment for people to try out around Woodward.
Okay, so this Wheels, as you called him, front and back flips in his wheelchair.
That's correct, yeah.
Great, okay. I haven't seen him. That's crazy. So what kind of tricks are we talking about, maybe the rookies here kind of learning?
Yeah, so the wheelie is a classic, always useful to get around, but fun in the skate park. Learning how to drop into the skate bowls. He does a trick where you get on one of your wheels, so going off to the side and spinning in circles on one wheel. I've seen him try to teach people that at the past wheelchair paloozas. And, you know, Aaron has a cool mentality. I've been able to meet him before, and, you know, falling is part of the game. And so he is not afraid to not land his first tricks and try to teach people how to crash safely when they're trying new tricks as well.
Yeah, does it take any specialized wheelchair, or something that just most people might be in anyway?
Yeah, that's a great question. Aaron does have a specialized wheelchair, but for this event, having people come out in whatever their daily chair is totally fine and a great place to start.
All right. Do people need to register to be a part of, or is it just show up?
Yeah, so we would love if people can pre-register, and you can do that on our website, wasatchadaptivesports.org, and if you go to our event page, you'll see a link for the Wheelchair Palooza. If you're not able to register, we will be doing registration in person before the event.
All right. How many people do you usually get to show up for something like this?
Yeah, I can't remember the exact number that came last year. We were at Sandy Skate Park, and I was there, and there was a ton of people. I heard that there was over 100 wheelchair users that came out with their family. So, you know, we're talking upwards of 200 to 300 people.
Okay, because I know that you're serving pizza, and it's free, so it's probably a good thing if people want a piece of pizza to register so you know how much to order.
Yes, exactly. And then I did want to mention that this event is free for wheelchair users and their families, and that's in large part because of the Challenged Athletes Foundation that's sponsoring the event, and they're an organization that helps fund equipment and experiences for people with disabilities.
All right. Well, what are some of the other programs that Wasatch Adaptive Sports offers to the community?
Yeah, so we are lucky enough to mountain bike at Woodward, so we've been able to build a connection there. And then we do a lot of road biking in Salt Lake along the Jordan River Trail, paddleboarding at Tibble Fork, and then our largest program is skiing at Snowbird in the winter.
Okay. Mountain biking, are those hand cycles that you use, or it just depends on the disability, huh?
Yeah, so we have hand cycles for someone who wouldn't be able to pedal a bike with their legs. And then we also have adaptive, like trike mountain bikes that can go off-road as well.
Okay. Where can people find out more about what you offer?
Yeah, so you can check us out on the internet, wasatchadaptivesports.org. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, and I think we're also on TikTok under Wasatch Adaptive Sports.
Okay. Anything else you'd like people to know about this event or what you do?
Yeah, so there will be other adaptive programs coming. So if we can, or people can connect with different adaptive programs in the area. And then really just seeing Wheels, Aaron Fotheringham out doing tricks is a sight to see. What he's able to do and the risks he's willing to take definitely breaks stereotypes of what a wheelchair user looks like.
Cool. Okay. Hey, Jared, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great one.
Jared Dangerfield, again, the programs director with Wasatch Adaptive Sports, and again, the Wheelchair Palooza happening at Woodward on Saturday from 4 to 8 p.m. KPCW News Time now, 8:56. Well, as required by state lawmakers, the Summit County Council approved affordable housing plans for the Snyderville Basin and the east side of the county on Monday, which could force Kimball Junction to allow some high-density development. The housing plan is a new requirement for counties that came out of the massive House Bill 462, which Governor Spencer Cox signed earlier this year. The goal of the bill is to push local governments to help combat the state's housing shortage amid population growth. The housing plan requires the county to report to the state how it will create affordable housing. In exchange, Summit County will receive millions of dollars in state funding for a variety of projects, including transportation. Most notably, it requires Summit County to include a Housing and Transit Reinvestment Zone, or HTRZ, in the plan. That's because it has a transit hub serving four routes at the Kimball Junction Transit Center. An HTRZ requires high density, at least 39 homes per acre, in buildable areas around transit hubs like at Kimball Junction. Last year, Dakota Pacific Real Estate proposed such a project. The developer wants to build over 1,000 housing units, a hotel and office space on some 58 acres near the Skull Candy building at Kimball. The developer eventually asked the county to pause the plans after nearly 1,000 residents attended a public hearing in person and online to oppose the project. The law passed months after the project stalled. County officials have said that Dakota Pacific lobbied to get the HTRZ piece in the bill. At the Summit County Council special meeting on Monday, Councilmember Roger Armstrong said that the law singled out the county with that HTRZ provision.
One of the funniest things in this in the legislation, they didn't just make it really precise. They designed it so it wouldn't affect any other county later by saying you had to have created your small transit district on or before January 1, 2022. So anybody that created a small transit district January 2nd, 2022 doesn't have the same burden.
Bonnie Park is a founder of the Friends for Responsible Development for Greater Park City. The group previously organized against the Dakota Pacific application and has taken donations. She suggested the county send the plan over by its October 1st deadline without the HTRZ.
We have 90 days to remedy that, which takes us to the end of the year and a new legislative session. So
Park hoped that by biding time, the law's HTRZ requirement could be changed by state lawmakers. Summit County Chief Civil Attorney Dave Thomas did not agree with that idea.
The problem with playing games with the legislature is you generally get burned.
He said that the county could lose out on millions in transportation funding within that 90-day review period. The Summit County Planning Department is currently analyzing a traffic study submitted by Dakota Pacific as the firm prepares to submit a new, different application.